The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in Auckland, New Zealand. Christopher Swasbrook is the founder and managing director of Elevation Capital Management Limited. He was previously a partner of Goldman Sachs JB Were in New Zealand and a foundation broker of the New Zealand Exchange, and prior to that, an individual full member of the New Zealand Stock Exchange. Chris currently serves as a member of the NZX Listing Subcommittee, the NZ Markets Disciplinary Tribunal, and is also chairman of Bethune's Investments Limited, which has investments in aquatic businesses. Chris graduated from the University of Auckland with a BCom Economics in 1996 and has undertaken postgraduate and executive education courses at the University of Auckland, Columbia University, NYU, the London School of Economics, and Harvard's Kennedy School. Chris has been a regular instructor at the Best Ideas Conference, for which we are extremely grateful. He presented Post Holdings in 2014, Adidas in 2015, Coach in 2016, Luxottica in 2017, and Tiffany & Co. last year. It's always a real pleasure for me to have Chris here sharing his wisdom and ideas. And so on behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Chris. Please go ahead.
Good morning from New Zealand, John, and thank you very much for that introduction, and thank you again for having me back this year. The company that I would like to present on, or will present on this year, is Molson Coors Brewing Company. TAP is the stock code, TAP. It trades on the NYSE. Many of the listeners, I'm sure, will be familiar with this company. We'll move through the presentation reasonably quickly. And page 2 and 3 are our disclaimers. Please read these after I finish up with the presentation. And we'll start on page 4, and this is an old quote we found from Abraham Lincoln. I'm a firm believer in the people. If given the truth, they can be depended upon to meet any national crisis. The great point is to bring them the real facts and beer. And we like that quote, and we would like everyone to bring more beer to debate what's going on in world politics around the tables on an ongoing basis in the future. In terms of an introduction to Molson, just quickly on page 6, you will see it's the sixth largest brewer in the world, $14 billion market capitalization. Here on page 7 through 10, we have detailed the history and the holding company structure for you and how the Molson Coors that we're talking about today was ultimately formed. But to really understand Molson Coors today, you have to focus on the 2016 MillerCoors transaction. And this was, MillerCoors was the joint venture with SAB Miller and Molson on the US beer market, and SAB owned 58% of this business, Molson owned 42% of this business. And of course, when AB InBev bid for SAB Miller, they were forced to divest MillerCoors. Now, when you're the joint venture partner in these things, you really should be excited when these opportunities come along, because you are pretty much, well, you are the only buyer. You have the first right of refusal. And what you saw was that Molson Coors was able to pick up the 58% of the MillerCoors joint venture for a very attractive price, 9.2 times EV to EBITDA. This compares to AB InBev bidding over 18 times EBITDA for SAB Miller. And we've detailed all of the key metrics here around how the company transformed as a result of that one transaction. And they really had to step up. They had to increase their leverage. And that is one of the reasons why the stock has been under pressure, and I'll come to that soon. But as I said, they paid 9.2 times EV to EBITDA, post-adjustment for net present value of expected tax benefits, and compared to AB InBev paying 18.7 times SAB Miller. Now, obviously, the US beer market is mature. SAB Miller was wanting to get, AB InBev was wanting to get a hold of SAB Miller's emerging market footprint and was willing to pay up for that. We can debate whether that multiple was too high on a separate occasion, because obviously AB InBev's stock has been under significant pressure as well, alongside all other most other brewers around the world. But here you can see how Molson Coors, after the transaction, their volumes grew significantly. Their net sales grew significantly. Underlying EBITDA grew significantly. And most importantly, free cash flow grew significantly. So this was a transformational event that they are still working through today. And that presents investors with the opportunity that I'm talking about. Now, in terms of all of these numbers and when we go through multiples, we completed this presentation at the end of November. The stock price was $64.10 US dollars per share. Today, Molson Coors closed at $62.86. It was a lot lower in December and was extremely compelling back then, but still very, 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 very compelling here in our belief. But so you are, when we talk about Molson today, the price is lower than all of the multiples that are detailed in this presentation. And that's a point that I did want to convey early on. So in terms of geographical segments, the US market, no surprise, is the major part of the business, accounting for 68% of sales. And that is one of the primary concerns for investors, because the US beer market is declining and it's very much mature. And now people are freaking about the risk from cannabis and marijuana legalization. And so we'll talk about that more going forward. But in terms of the geographical breakdown, US went from 48% to 68% on the back of the transaction. Canada and Europe moved down from 22 to 13 in the case of Canada, and Europe 28 to 18%. So this is predominantly a US beer business, and that is one reason why the market is negative on this stock. But what the market is not focusing on is what I really want to talk about, and that is that there is significant cost savings to come out as a result of this transaction, the MillerCoors acquisition. And they forecast cost savings between 2017 and 2019, when they did the transaction, of $550 million. They've upgraded these twice since the acquisition, and they are now targeting $700 million. That last target was $700 million. In November 2018. And so this highlights the compelling nature of the MillerCoors transaction that the market is giving them no credit for. And beer really is a scale business. So I just want to talk to you about the brand portfolio and just highlight their brands for those of you that are not familiar with this business. Here are all their global priority brands detailed here. People fret about craft. Molson are number one in craft in the US. They have the number one craft brand in the US, Blue Moon. They actually have the number one craft brand in Spain, number one craft brand in Ireland. They are in craft. And so people fretting about that, yes, there are upstarts coming through all the time, but those that get traction, what you have seen is the big beer companies do mop them up and put them into their network. And there's huge synergy extraction as a result of that. They've also got these regional champion brands. They've also got other craft and imported beer brands that they either distribute or make under license. And here is their other brands. This is a very large brand portfolio, clearly not as large as AB InBev's, but still significant. And so we think the brand portfolio is compelling. There's plenty of opportunity to roll that brand portfolio out around the world, and you will see Molson focus on that as they continue to bed down the US business, extract the synergies there, and then focus on rolling those brands out around the world. So this is a business that does not have limited growth opportunities. Yes, core market is challenged, we know that, and not growing, but that is offset by the cost savings program and their ability to take price. Now, some people are concerned about the ability to take price on a go-forward basis, and we'll touch on that later when we talk about the threats. Industry outlook, beer is now having to adapt to our lifestyles, whereas in the past, lifestyles adapted to beer, according to the Interbrand CEO. And so that has got people worried, and global beer production around the world has, in the key markets, China and the US, both declined in 2017. So this data comes from a variety of the Bath report or the Kirin Beer report, Kirin data book, I should say. And look, beer consumption grew steadily from 2007 and peaked in 2014. And so this is what will drive further industry consolidation in our view. And you saw that, and you have seen that, and you will continue to see that going forward. And beer is scale, beer has tremendous cost savings when you do consolidate these businesses. And we think that is another attractive characteristic of the industry overall. There will be further consolidation that people are not putting any weight on at the moment. Beer consumption by region, I won't dwell on all these slides, but we've detailed it here for you if you wish to drill down of those markets that are growing around the world. And in terms of, I want to move forward to the board, management, company culture, and employee efficiency, because when you invest into this company, you have to understand that the Molson Coors family still have voting control. And a lot of people are not comfortable with investing in family-controlled companies. And that is proven time and time again to be the wrong stance, and I want to talk about that in a couple of slides. The management team, seasoned veterans, Mark Hunter is doing a great job. He's a great CEO, has very, very high ratings, and I'll come to it in a minute, from employees and former employees on Glassdoor. And if you listen to him on the conference call, he articulates very well on what his strategy is. And so I would encourage you to listen to those conference calls and read those transcripts if you really are interested in delving further into this company. Company culture, as I said, Glassdoor, very high ratings for a CEO. 95% approval rating. And so we always look at Glassdoor just to see how former employees, as I said, are anonymously rating and reviewing companies. So in terms of employee efficiency, no surprise, with increasing scale, they've been able to improve their efficiency. And so they've got one of the highest employee efficiency ratios amongst the global brewers. But again, that should not surprise post a big transaction like this. Moving through to the financials and the financial structure. And the capital return history is. I will come to the family control segment in a second. Looking at the historical revenue and net profit of this business going back, you can see that revenue top line has been challenged, but you can see on a net profit basis with the cost extraction that they have been able to achieve, that profits have actually been moving up, and this is better shown in these charts here. In terms of the margin story, looking at margin, gross profits, margins have been under pressure due to the weak US market and cost inflation, but cost vigilance and greater than forecast synergy extraction have been able to drive the operating margin and net margins. In terms of capital expenditure and free cash flow, no surprise with a beer business, they generate tremendous amounts of free cash flow, and Molson is trading on a double-digit free cash flow yield at the moment. And we'd argue quite strongly that that's an indicator that the stock is trading below at a discount to its intrinsic value. And so 10.4% free cash flow yield based on a 64.10 share price when we did this presentation. Very efficient on generating their free cash flow, and we've detailed that here. In terms of the balance sheet, as I said, the leverage and the balance sheet went up post the MillerCoors transaction, went up to 5x EBITDA, and they are now bringing it down. And they've detailed the plan to bring this down, and it's not that far away now where they're talking about bringing the leverage down to 3.75x debt to EBITDA. And that's mid-2019. And the market is still not focusing on that, in our opinion. And when they bring that leverage ratio down, they're already they've articulated that they are going to increase the dividend. In terms of the contractual obligations, we've detailed that here for you in terms of sporting obligations and things like that. We've detailed how and the names of the entities where the Molson and Coors families hold their shares. And just touching on the dividends again, this company traditionally has returned capital to shareholders via a conservative dividend policy. It's a sustainable dividend policy. They haven't raised their dividend for 15 quarters, but they've now promised to increase dividends as soon as the leverage ratio hits 3.75x EBITDA. And they expect to increase the quarterly dividend by 40 to 75%. And that is a significant increase. And so that will lift the dividend yield from 2.56% to 3.5% to 4.5% in that range. And some people are saying, well, they should be buying back shares. Look, I mean, we are quite happy for them to increase the dividend like that. And again, we do not believe the market is giving them any credit for that at the moment, despite the fact that they've articulated it very clearly. They have also said that they will institute a share buyback again, probably in 2020, 2021. They had share buybacks in the past, but when they made acquisitions, they obviously suspended those. But they are not adverse to putting in place buybacks either. But dividends will be what will drive the stock in the short term. Now, touching on, I mentioned family-owned businesses before. Look, these family-owned businesses have a very strong history of delivering. And another instructor that has spoken about this in the past, John, of yours, is Tom Russo, talks extensively about investing into family-controlled businesses. And Molson Coors, in terms of age, 34th oldest company on the Credit Suisse Family 1000 report. And for those of you that are interested in this, and this is a proven investment strategy now that Credit Suisse writes about every year. It's a Credit Suisse Family 1000 report. And just look at the charts on the left. Look at how family companies outperform non-family owned companies. Family owned companies generate better margins than non-family owned companies. And why is that? It's basically they don't focus on the short term. They have the flexibility to move away from the quarter-to-quarter earnings calendar, and they can focus on through the cycle margins and returns. And that allows for smoother cash flow, thereby lowering the need for external funding. And all of this, as Credit Suisse says, has supported share price outperformance on these family-owned companies since 2006, when they first started writing about this phenomenon within the market. And look, don't rely on Credit Suisse, and don't rely on me. Someone that's much smarter than pretty much all of us is talking about this phenomenon now. This is from Seth Klarman's recent speech at Harvard Business School. One of society's most vexing problems is the relentless short-term orientation that manifests itself in investing, in business making decisions, and in our politics. So even Mr. Klarman is trying to articulate this now. And so do not be scared of these family-owned businesses, and certainly do not be scared of Molson Coors in that regard. And here we've detailed their shareholder-oriented corporate strategic framework for you if you do want to delve into that. Increasingly amongst our client base, particularly the institutional clients, ESG is a focus. So we always put this in here now in terms of how does the company rate on ESG score. It's a B. No surprise what weighs it down, the governance pillar, because of the family control. Again, given what the Credit Suisse report shows you, don't rely on my data, rely on their data. It does raise the question about these low ratings for these family controlled businesses in certain family-controlled businesses in terms of the governance with regard to these ESG scores. But we've detailed it here for you. People question us regularly on this, so we detail it there for all our clients. Comparable companies, now looking how Molson stacks up. As I've said, it's a $14 billion market cap company, so sixth largest brewer in the world by volume. It's certainly smaller than some of the other players detailed here. In terms of margins, apart from gross profit margin, Molson's above average when compared to peers, and should be able to improve further as they drive further cost savings, synergy extraction, in our view, and management's view for that matter. In terms of financial leverage, as I said, this is one thing that's really weighing on the stock at the moment, is the leverage when you look at it post the 58% purchase of the MillerCoors stake. But as we view this as a short-term phenomenon, pay down the debt. It was a once-in-a-lifetime transaction that was an attractive price, gave them meaningful scale, and they have started to delever in mid-2019 to bring it down to 3.75 times EBITDA, and they will bring it down further after that, is not that far away, and then you see the dividend increase. So there are near-term catalysts approaching very, very rapidly in terms of the stock. So the company is trading at a discount to its peers on an EV to EBITDA basis, trailing 12 months, next 12 months. On a PE basis, trailing 12 months, it offers one of the highest yields, going higher in the next little while, and so we think the stock will re-rate sooner rather than later on a number of these factors. And then when you start to look at what's been happening, as I touched on earlier, global brewing industry consolidation, and you look at the multiples. And we're not saying that Molson is going to be bought tomorrow or anything like that, but when you look at the industry transaction multiples back to 2008, average multiple 14 times. The industry will continue to consolidate. Who's a potential acquirer of Molson Coors? You could have a list of them. I'm not going to speculate on the names, but if you just put Molson on an M&A multiple of 14 times, it's worth $115 a share, which is 80% from current prices. Now that is not a premise for investing, but it does give you some to show you what kind of discount it is trading at relative to industry multiples that have occurred in the past, what experienced industry players have been willing to pay for these businesses. So it gives you a marker to kind of think about in terms of at the upper end of where you could see value. Threats and opportunities, again, we'll go through these quickly because they're all detailed here for you to delve into yourselves. But competition within the beer industry is intense, particularly amongst the global brewers, now the craft brewers, alcohol beverage companies, wines and spirits. I mean, particularly people are worried about that in terms of one of the drivers of the beer companies is premiumization. And the question being asked is how long before the brewers cannot raise prices fast enough to offset the declining volumes, or when above premium beers become direct competitors of wines and spirits. So I think there's a fair way to go in that regard, but it's something that you need to think about when you're looking at this company. Competition from outside alcoholic beverage industry. Clearly, legalization of marijuana, cannabis is going to excuse the pun, cannibalize some revenues within the business. But what you're seeing is just like Constellation, Molson has entered into a duel. Constellation bought a stake in a marijuana company. Molson has set up a joint venture and is investing into the joint venture to come out with drinks with in targeting CBD and targeting the cannabis industry in that regard and populate their suite of products with those products so they can stay in the game in that regard. In terms of global economic conditions, clearly that's a factor one has to always think about, and the trade war is hitting the beer companies because of the cost of commodity prices. And then people, as I said, we don't get concerned about it, but people get very concerned, and wrongly in this case, in our view, the Molsons have been, the Molson and Coors family have been very good stewards over a long period of time, but people get concerned about the ownership issues. And then you've got regulation, labour union issues, global warming, clearly, with barley, global barley production, and global businesses, you've got foreign exchange risks to consider. And we've detailed all of those there. But the opportunities are still are numerous and offer meaningful upside, and certainly can compensate in a challenged US beer market in terms of a flattening profile or declining profile. And if you look at low alcohol or non-alcoholic beers, I mean, they are growing. And one interesting fact about alcohol-free beers is they generate significantly more revenue and margin versus traditional beers because of no alcohol excise tax to pay. And now there's also fermented or brewed or distilled. There's hard sit sparkling and spike seltzers. They're in that business, and those. They're still small, excuse the pun, small beer in the overall scheme of things, but they are there and they are supplementing their product portfolio. And then, of course, non-alcoholic cannabis-infused beverages. And so they've entered into a joint venture. It's called Truss, and they are expecting to bring out beverages in 2019-2020 to target that market as well. In terms of deleveraging, we've touched on bringing the debt down from 5 times debt to EBITDA in 2016 to 3.75 times by mid-2019. That will see them increase the quarterly dividend. The next step will be reinstate share repurchase program. One hopes they give it a breather, but there's also the potential that they can be a consolidator, or that they could be an acquisition target in the fullness of time, particularly when the leverage comes down as is planned. So look, opportunities, again, we think long-term minded shareholders are a huge asset to these kind of businesses. There is further cost saving extraction to be done. And so to get towards a conclusion and think about the estimated intrinsic values and then summarize Molson for you so you can then ask me some questions, those that are on this call, is how we think about Molson is in a worst case scenario, we go back to global financial crisis multiples, 8.9 times EV to EBITDA, take a haircut to the earnings, and you've got 28% downside from 64.10. But if you just say the business that they can achieve the cost saving target, and that the dividend starts to increase and confidence starts to return in terms of the stock, you can see a normalization to 12 times EV to EBITDA. And if it just moves back to the peer average, because it's trading below peer averages, at 13 times EV to EBITDA, you've got 60% upside. And in an M&A scenario, as I said, about 80% upside. So, but again, M&A is not our core premise. What we are saying is that when the debt hits in mid-2019, hits 3.75%, the dividend gets escalated as indicated, you will start to see the market re-rate and confidence return into the stock, irrespective of the outlook for the beer industry. And we all know that the top line is challenged, but with Molson in particular, they can offset the challenges on the top line with further cost savings because of this transformational acquisition that they made back in 2015, 2016. And remember, Molson, you know, they spend about 12% of revenue on marketing. They still have, I'm sure they don't want to go above that, but they have marketing muscle, and that positions them very well against these small craft producers that people are fretting about as well. So, and we have invested in Molson in the past. We first invested in 2011 when it was during a time when, again, people were despondent on these global brewers. Consumers were shifting consumption towards beer and wine. The market was still growing then, of course. But again, we bought Molson below book value at that time, and we sold it as they announced the SAB Miller transaction, because we had reached closer to our intrinsic value target, and we felt that the stock would, with taking on the increased debt, the stock would start to pull back. I mean, we generated a very attractive return over 4.7 years. I mean, we started buying it again, and we've detailed that here. But look, really, again, to summarize, distill it down to a couple of points of why you should look at this stock is you buy Molson Coors when it's trading below book value. It's at or near book value at the moment. So, yeah, this is the historical trade. This is the historical price to book of Molson over time. And so we think that's one simple measure to look at and consider. And then you buy Molson when the free cash flow yield is above 10%. And that is the case today. And again, that's another measure to consider alongside all of the other key facts that I've put on the table. So what we say is opportunity knocks again. And to quickly summarize, you know, successive rounds of M&A, Molson has become one of the largest brewers in the world. However, in recent years, beer consumption, especially non-craft beers, is in decline in developed countries. And this, coupled with Molson Coors' higher leverage to fund the MillerCoors transaction, are the main reasons why Molson is one of the worst performing publicly listed global brewers recently, and currently trading near or below book value and with a 10% free cash flow yield. And we believe what will drive a re-rating in the stock in 2019 and 2020 is a continuation of the deleveraging that you've seen to 3.75 times debt to EBITDA, an increase in the quarterly dividends from current levels by 40 to 70%. That's significant in my book in 2019. They will come into the cannabis-infused beverage market, and so they will address the uncertainty that legalization of marijuana cannabis has had on these companies. They will be in that marketplace. They will deliver. I expect that they'll deliver early on the $700 million 20 cost savings. Bear in mind that's already upgraded from $550 million in the 2017 to 2019 period, and in time they'll reinstate a share repurchase program, which again will offer support to the stock but give people further confidence. So we think the stock will re-rate to 12 times EV to EBITDA. That implies $92 a share upside from these levels, over 40%. In a takeover scenario, which is not a major premise, again, to reiterate that point, you can look at industry average since 2008 across the world, 14 times EV to EBITDA implies $115 per share, offering upside of up to 80%. So with that, I'll leave it open to any questions or open it up to any questions. And thank you very much once again, John.
Chris, thank you very much for this presentation. I'd just like to remind everyone listening, if you do have a question, please feel free to type it into the online interface at this time. Chris, thank you so much for talking about family-controlled businesses and why those actually do tend to make for good long-term investments. Specific to Molson Coors, could you elaborate a little bit on the involvement of the family? How much of an involvement do they have in the day-to-day?
Well, not day-to-day. I'll just go back to the relevant slide there, and you can see here on the board. So Not in the management of the company here, which is detailed on page 32, as far as I'm aware. But you can see around the board that there's four family members, and there's the CEO and then there's nine what deemed independent directors. And so, but the family has the voting control through the B shares, or through the A shares, actually, I should say. So that's how the family has input, through the chairman, the vice chairman, and two directors, out of a pool of 14 directors, but they have the supermajority in terms of voting.
What, in your mind, are the key data points to track going forward to either validate or challenge your thesis here?
Well, I think clearly you want to look at beer volumes in the US, and if they start to fall very rapidly, then the thesis could be impaired. But I think the ones to focus on is the cost savings targets, which they've been delivering on ahead of schedule, the debt levels, and then by virtue of that, what the dividend stream is, and if they follow through on the dividend. It's not a complicated story, this one, in our view. But you do have to focus on the beer industry in terms of how fast it is declining, does it stabilise, and so that is one number that you do have to focus on. But it's been a pretty it's not been a steep decline in terms of the substitution effect that has been going on. So that gives me a little bit of comfort. And also, Molson has got to, that they, one area where they did slip a little bit has been on Coors and Coors Light, and they are looking to reinvigorate that brand at the moment. And as if you think back over time, with beer companies, I guess Heineken being the one exception with the Heineken brand, beer companies do go through this. You know, the brands get a little bit tired, the advertising campaigns, and they have to reinvigorate the brand. But they're usually pretty successful at doing that. I mean, they are great marketers, and they have the cash to be able to put behind these brands.
I'll read a question from the queue. Regarding acquisitions, who is a reasonable purchaser? The lager and lager light segments are not particularly attractive in the U.S., and antitrust might be a concern.
Look, I think Heineken could be a natural buyer of this business, because, you know, it would, if you look at it, it would fill out the footprint, or one of the Japanese brewers. So, and neither of those parties should have antitrust issues. But the question that, you know, the beer industry in the US is largely two players, with a whole lot of craft players now, and so you are right. It limits people that can purchase them, but yeah, it's not M&A is not the primary premise here, but it'd be nice to have. Of course, it's always nice to have, but the buyers, that would be where I see the buyers.
Who, in your mind, is the best run company in this industry?
Heineken, hands down Heineken.
And Chris, maybe lastly, in terms of capital allocation over the long term here, what would you like to see as the key priorities for management?
Well, I think I said I'm comfortable with increasing the dividend, because that will be a surefire way to see some buyers come into the stock, because the yield will be attractive. I'm just not a huge believer in share buybacks, because very few companies, now family companies standing aside, actually under very few boards actually understand the intrinsic value of their stock, and the share buybacks, as we all know, tend to be very robotic, and they tend to be chasing the stock all the way up and then panic when the market downturns and puts their hand has a downturn and put their hand in their pockets and don't buy back any shares then. So I'm not one of these believers in share buybacks that these big companies tend to fall into the trap of, because as you know, you need a good capital allocator at the top of the table to actually drive that. Now, Molson and the Coors families there, and to be fair to Mark Hunter, I think they understand intrinsic value. And you can see where I've detailed, if you go back to the share buyback, I've detailed, they never got carried away when they had a share buyback going on. They bought judiciously, and they seem to have stuck to some kind of price limit. So I think that's the benefit again of family controlled companies. You don't get these crazy buybacks that just come out and we just want to return some cash to shareholders irrespective of the price through a buyback. And so I have a preference for dividends and return the cash to ourselves, and we can decide where we want to put that cash and whether that particular company offers a compelling opportunity for reinvestment of those dividends.
There's actually a follow-up to your answer to a previous question, and it regards Heineken and whether you could elaborate on why you believe it is the best run company in the space.
I think if you just listen to the management and look at how they have executed around the world over a long period of time, they really do stand out to me as being judicious and highly responsible with capital. And if you go back in time, you know, there was some criticism when they bought the balance of Asia Pacific breweries, and some people said, oh, they panicked because someone else was going to have a crack at it. But that proved to be a very astute purchase. It consolidated the whole Asian hub for them, really. You've only got Heineken Malaysia out there now in that part of the world as a Heineken controlled listed subsidiary. And you look at what they did with Tiger as a result of getting control of APB in that regard. But if you really look at Heineken, and Heineken came in and bought DB Group in New Zealand here, and you look at what they've done with that business over time, and now with Monteith's, which is a New Zealand brand, they've taken the Monteith's brand around the world. And yes, it's ridden on the back of semi-craft. I'd call Monteith's semi-craft, but they've done a very, very good job of it. So I'm focused. I look at what they've done locally. I mean, we've been an investor. We don't own shares in it at the moment in Heineken Holdings, and that's a way to buy Heineken at somewhat of a discount to the Heineken share price. But I just look at them and listen to them every year, go along and listen to them at various points in time, and they are very, very good operators, and they know how to run their businesses. And I think they are the best operators in the world in that regard. And on the flip side is AB InBev. They have been very good at the cost out program, and up until a point now they've really hit a little bit of a hurdle with SAB Miller. But the real criticism there, of course, now across a number of their companies is that the reinvestment has not. There's a belief that they haven't reinvested back into the brands, and as a result, those companies are suffering. Whereas you look at Heineken, they're very good operators, they're very efficient operators, but they also know how to invest into the brand. And you know, it helps that you've got the best, the number one beer in the world, the most popular super premium lager in the world, in terms of you know, customer. What the customers perceive, whether it's the biggest by volume, is not what I'm talking about. But Heineken is believed to be the ultimate beer brand in the world. And so they have done a very good job. all around the world. And so I don't have a specific metric off the top of my head to point to, but if you just listen to the management and compare them against other management teams out there, they do stand out.
Wonderful. Well, Chris, I will leave it there and just want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us again on this occasion and to share another very interesting idea with our members. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you, John. And I will just end on reminding everyone, I didn't make a comment at the end. There's a whole series of appendices here that go through all of the management and deal with the management there and how we derive from Thomson Reuters ICON the ESG scores. So there's more profiles on the directors as well there. So thank you very much once again. I hope people found it interesting. We think it's compelling, needless to say. So we'll see in 24 months' time how it goes.
Thank you very much, Chris. Goodbye for now.
Thanks, John.